Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit Michter's.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
I'm Jackie Berger, host of Just Food Stories. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. It's a lovely day here in Brooklyn, and it's kind of... I'm as you can tell, I'm not in New Orleans right now, where a lot of people are. I kind of feel like I dodged a bullet, but I do want to say to everyone on that note, have so much fun at Tales of the Cocktail this year, but be careful. Drink lots of water and never finish a drink. That's my theory. Moving on to the show today. Actually, I've known this bartender for as long as I've been in New York, and I met him when he was working at this little place where I used to go get margaritas, some of the best margaritas in town, I believe. And then eventually started moving more into like the cocktail bar world, and he's one of my favorite bartenders out there today. So welcome to the show, Tim Miner.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I met you when you were working at Lobo.
Yeah, way back in the day.
You were working there for a very long time.
Oh my God, it seems like forever. I was there 8.5 years, which by bartender's lifespans is like 6 lifespans, I think.
Yeah. I've been at my current job for 6 years, and I feel like I keep joking around about it, like saying that no one's ever worked in one place as long as I have. But yeah, you just totally punked me on that one.
I'm the only one though. And I haven't been running that program. I never ran that program, so none of the stresses. Just go and make the drinks go home.
Go and make the drinks go home. That's nice, man. Sometimes I wish I could just do that, you know. But I think I'm too much of a control freak.
I just went back to doing that, and I get pangs of wishing I was running a program. And other days, I'm like, thank God I'm not running this program right now. So
absolutely. So you were there 8 years, man. And then you moved on and you started getting into the cocktail world.
Yeah, I moved while I was sort of ending my tenure at Lobo. I started picking up shifts and training at the Jake Walk under our mutual friend Eddie. And he taught me how to make good drinks and fancy pants cocktails.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
And you had some really awesome drinks. And there was Mr. October.
Oh, that one did well for me.
Yeah.
That one's a crowd pleaser if ever there was one.
Yeah.
But it was you know, one of those that I think I'd had 2 or 3 tries to put that drink together. And all of a sudden, I just took one sip and I was like, well, hot damn, that one's done. And I just turned to Dave Nermid. I was like, try this. And he got mad at me. So I was like, yeah, it must be good. All right.
So then you must have realized that you had a knack for this, and that probably helped drive your desire to do more, right?
Yeah, I mean, every time you have any amount of success, the personal success where you feel like you've accomplished something that you were setting out to do, it kind of spurs you to keep moving in that direction, and tells you you haven't gone too far off the trail.
Yeah,
you know. So yeah, I like doing that. I like anything that allows you to be creative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And drink making certainly is that. Be as weird as you want to be. You don't have to stick to the old classic specs.
I hear you, man. Get weird. yeah, so I can't remember, but I remember the drink was delicious, but run us through the recipe.
Mr. October is 1.5 Laird's Bonded Applejack, 3/4 lemon, 3/4 simple, half Galliano L'Autentico, and I think it's been a long time since I made one. It's not fall. 2 dashes of St. Elizabeth's allspice, and you know, shake, strain up, nutmeg over the top, nice and easy. I just mentioned getting away from the classic specs, though that one pretty much strictly adheres to them.
It sounds like it's based on your classic sour spec, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's cool. It's pretty easy.
Nice. Yeah. I think you know, Laird's Bonded is just, it's the best.
it's certainly up there.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer now that Rittenhouse changed their packaging, because the Laird's Bonded and Bond and the Rittenhouse looked so nice. They were like the back bars, like old buddies.
Yeah, I feel like those and Old Granddad And old like, granddad. If the Laird's and old granddad change, it's like going to change the entire landscape of the of the backboard. Or in places we work, our rails.
Yeah.
You know, let's face it, nobody's advertising those bottles. We're just pulling them every time we make a drink.
Well, but I don't know, man. I've got mine I'm not on the back bar.
I'm not saying they aren't worth advertising. Yeah. Merely that mine have always been stuffed neatly in a rail.
Yeah, that's true. I think, yeah, it's been kind of crazy lately with all the label changes. Have you just noticed a really insane amount of, like, repackaging lately? I mean, Powers just did theirs.
Oh, did they? We don't stock the regular entry-level Powers. Like, we keep accidentally getting the Powers John Lane, which is a happy accident every time, because that stuff's delicious. But I haven't seen a Powers bottle in so long that I didn't know they had changed it.
Yeah, that one changed.
There wasn't the Facebook and Twitter fervor that there was over the Rittenhouse bottle. Everyone got so mad.
They did. There was a huge uproar online and in social media about the Rittenhouse package change. It was also like the little underline that used to be under Rittenhouse. It's the same font, but now the little squiggly like underline, like you would see on like a baseball jersey.
Yeah, I wonder if they've changed their bottling for their older age statement whiskeys. We used to have a 23 and a 25 when I was running Jake Walk. And those bottles, like, you know, the Rittenhouse Bonded was just like utilitarian paper label, but those bottles were actually quite stunning. I really liked them.
Yeah, I doubt they'll change those because they'll
still have that swoosh.
Yeah, they will. Nice. The swoosh. The Rittenhouse swoosh.
Yeah.
Those bottles were pretty modern to begin with. I mean, like, it's a fairly new product.
Yeah.
I mean, over the past maybe decade, that's when they really started popping around. So I don't think they're due for a label change.
No, they need to upgrade yet.
Yeah. But it's kind of crazy. I mean, like, I think it's interesting to see how many have changed and how that side of this whole world is perceiving, like, the way that they should be packaged. You know, you could also say that, I mean, they probably don't want their spirit in the well, you know, that's well, like Plymouth, you know, they went back to the old label, but then they put it in a wider bottle because everyone had it in their rail.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to be that product.
Yeah. I don't know if I understand that argument. I mean, I can understand it from saying we think so highly of our own product that it deserves its moment in the sun, or at least the back bar lights. But I don't know, to be the best rail spirit out there for as far as rye whiskeys go, the one that is in every bar's rail, it seems to me that that's the more lucrative option for them. So
well,
it's surprising.
More cases instead Certainly. Of a bottle at a time.
I mean, and I get it. Like, it is a product that should be considered along the lines of the others that are, you know, the great rye whiskeys. But I think from a business standpoint, if I found that, you know, every November nobody could get my product because I had sold through it all already, I'd be pretty happy. I'd just try to start making more.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another thing. I mean, speaking of like the creativity of like coming up with drinks, as we were talking about before, it's like, man, we're blasting through so much more product these days and running out. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, right now we're experiencing a really hard time getting any American whiskey.
It's really been remarkable, the amount of, you know, rail or at least like entry level back shelf American whiskeys that you just can't get your hands on right now. Like the really, really great stuff that's, you know, you can pour for between $8 and $12 a pour that nobody's really going to be too bummed out about the price. Just say that's delicious and it's worth it every time. Our rails at the Long Island bar where I'm at now is we've been pretty fortunate that we found like something to work with that's been sticking around. And I don't want to tell you what it is because I don't want everyone to go buy it. But you know, I used to carry W. L. Weller's 90, and the what did we go from there? Buffalo Trace was in our rail for a while, and like these are all ones that are just becoming tricky and trickier to keep in consistently. So it's like,
and those aren't necessarily considered like that entry level, you know?
They're great whiskeys. I mean, for my money, W. H. Weller's 7-year 90 proof is bang for the buck. That's got to be my favorite American bourbon whiskey. Yeah. I mean, it's just glorious, and whenever I can keep it in, I want to.
Yeah, it's so weird. You just never see it around anymore. I actually had a couple of the white label reserve bottles, the short squatty ones, before they changed it over.
Yeah.
And I kind of like, accidentally, you know, at a cookout. I was like, wait a minute. Let's just crack this open. Oh. And it lasted about 3 minutes.
Of course, yeah. Everyone's well, at a cookout, nothing liquid lasts too long.
That's true. That is true. I think I still got a bottle of Old Forester sitting on my picnic table in my backyard right now. I know I do, in fact. Tristan Willie brought it over, and it didn't go back home with him.
I get to work with Tristan now. Once a week, he's started taking shifts at the LIB.
Yeah, you've been at the Long Island Bar now since they opened.
Yeah, since I was there the first day, yeah. And in mid-October, which is just a treat, you know. I wish my only regret about the Long Island Bar is that I didn't get to know the guys that own it, Toby and Joel, the year before while they were refurbishing it. Because in my former life, before I decided bartending was it, I was a carpenter for almost a decade, and refurbishing that bar would have been a fun little project. A lot of work, but it would have been one of those really really glorious ones that just pays off so much in the end.
Wow. So you're a carpenter before. Okay, I get it. This makes sense.
Measure twice, cut once. Yep, measure twice. Yep. That's why I like jiggers.
Yeah, exactly.
Free pouring's never been for me.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. But also building from spec, you know, and creating.
Yeah. It all kind of ties in. I've never been one who did well at a job where I didn't have a finished product either immediately or at least by the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, I always like to just look back and say, I did that, whether it's down at a cocktail or at a film set or you know, whatever. I mean, all the interior carpentry at Lobo, I when they remodeled, I built that with the owner. He and I did all the finished carpentry in like the house.
Wow.
Built cool. The bars out, built the booths, like all that. And it's still there, which is really cool. You go by and you're like, huh, I built that. And it's, you know, five, 8 years later and a couple hundred covers a night, if not certainly by the week, sitting in there, and it hasn't collapsed and turned to dust.
That's great. No one's sued anyone yet for faulty.
Luckily for me, I've never made it up to ownership level there. So if anyone does get sued, it won't be me. But I hope.
And you'll be long gone.
Yeah.
But like really, really like 5 blocks away.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be just around the corner, but I've cut my hair so they won't recognize me.
Nice. So we were talking about the. You know what? Okay, let's go back to that. So are you ever planning on opening up your own place and actually building it? Because that, if I were like a PR agency,
absolutely.
I mean, would blow that up, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I'm not, you know, licensed and all that to do like structural work and anything like that. Yeah. In my carpentry days, I was doing film and television work, which is all very...
It's not meant to last.
It's short term. No, man. You build it one day, they use it the next day, and then you tear it apart and throw it away the third, which is kind of cathartic and kind of heartbreaking each time, particularly if you like what you've built. But I would definitely want to do some of the interior stuff. I'd want to build my own bar. I'd want to, you know, you blood, sweat, and tears. The more you can put into your space, the more you're going to care about your space.
Absolutely, man.
And I think that for me, would be something that would be really amazing. I'd love to be at least have a hand in it. Certainly you're going to have to have contractors and things like that for, because
permits and,
I mean, also if I open something, you know, you're paying rent on an empty room that's generating no money. You gotta get it done in a timely fashion. So I'm aware that I'm not, you know, not doing it every day and not being a licensed contractor. I'm not the guy that's going to get it done in a week and turn that place around and start making money. So
that's why you do it.
You pick and choose the fun tasks that are going to look pretty and everybody's, oh, that's amazing. Yeah. I built that. And it's like, you know, the reason the roof hasn't fallen in on you is because of some other guy. You know? A very, very kind man, probably. Yeah. Or woman, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I did the same thing with the Prime Meats Bar. I was there like every night, you know, sanding and refinishing and building the table, putting... you know, whatever together.
Yeah, and I feel like, yeah, the guys that show up to do that are the ones that you're like, all right, they're going to get the good shifts because they already care about this place before it's made them any money.
Yeah.
Like, if you get staff that's like, ooh, I want to come by and help. Yeah. All right, I've hired well.
Yeah, exactly, man. You got to put your soul into it, man.
You do.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back in a minute with my good buddy, Tim Miner.
I'm Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. This summer, Heritage Radio Network is turning 5. Since our launch in 2009, we've continued to bring you food and culture content like nobody else. And we need your help. Heritage Radio Network is a passionate, grassroots, action-oriented, nonprofit organization. That means we depend on the support from listeners like you to keep us alive. If you love what you hear on Heritage Radio Network, visit our website and become a member today. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
Michter's Whiskey is a proud sponsor of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. If you drink the whiskey that warmed General Washington's troops at Valley Forge, does that make you a patriot? Not necessarily, but it indicates you appreciate that Michter sets the standard for highest quality, limited production whiskeys. America's first whiskey distilling company, Michter's rich history dates back to 1753, when a farmer in Schaeferstown, Pennsylvania, distilled his first batch of whiskey from hardy rye. At one point, a master distiller left his family's well-known distillery to join Michter's so he could be at a smaller, less cost-conscious company where he could make the finest whiskey, cost be damned. Ask your bartender or retailer for Michter's whiskey today. Chatham Imports is the national sales agent for Michter's Distillery. For more information, please visit www.michters.com. That's www.michters.com.
And we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and today we are chatting with Tim Miner. We were just talking about this before the break, how you're talking about set design and building something up, but then having to tear it down and it's gone, you know, immediately. I kind of feel the same way about a drink. You work really hard on making pretty. It's like, and then someone just slams it down, you know?
It's such a frustration when somebody drinks a cocktail faster than you could make it.
Yeah.
You're just like, but just have a shot.
It's called Saturday Night. That's why I don't work them anymore.
But that's how you make money, so you gotta good with the bad, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean, but then, like, I don't know. I mean, sure, we all want to make money so we can pay our rent, especially in this town. It's not the easiest,
cheapest
town.
They can't drink them fast enough in this town for me.
Yeah, I hear you, man. But, I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old man nowadays, but I like to sit there and talk. I mean, like, clearly that's why I have a radio show. talk about the cocktails and spirits and the history and, you know, and maybe have a drink with my guests while I'm doing it.
Yeah, you know? that's why you want to spread your schedule across the week. Like, Saturdays make your money and Monday make your regulars.
Yeah, absolutely.
I forgot who said that to me the other day. I was like, man, you are smarter than I am. I thought it was a really great sentence, and I don't know if it's an old adage or that she had picked up along the way or just one she'd come up with, but it was great.
Was it Katie's type?
No, it wasn't. It was no one I was working with. It was somebody else who tended bar that happened to sit in front of me a couple months ago at the LIB, and I feel bad. I'm blanking on who it was.
It sounds like a Katie's type thing.
It does. She's pretty wise.
Who you actually work with?
I did. She just moved on from us at the LIB, yeah. Which is sad because I got to work with her every Saturday night, and she's one of my favorite bartenders and one of a large staff at the LIB that I've been fortunate enough to work with and learn from. I was kind of the greenhorn is to the cocktail scene when I came in there because it was just a all-star lineup and then me at the bottom of it. And I was like, how did I get here? I was pretty psyched.
So run us through the overall vibe and kind of like night at Long Island Bar.
Long Island's great because it lets me do everything I've done throughout my career in bartending. We have a really, really great cocktail list that Toby Cicchini's built up, and, you know, you don't walk into Toby's bar and expect to have a cocktail that isn't stellar. And he, you know, he comes through on that. And he's got aces behind the bar making all the drinks, so every night, no matter who you sit down in front of, it's going to be prepared perfectly. And then he's from Wisconsin, so he grew up, you know, came up drinking beer and eating cheese curds and... And so we sell those things. We sell pitchers of beer. We've cheap glass, cold pitchers of beer. So really we've got something for everybody there, which is why I love it. It's just, he wants it to be a neighborhood tavern where we know a ton of our guests when they walk in through the door, and like any good bartenders do, but it, like, most of our guests are not coming from Manhattan. They're not coming from elsewhere. They're coming from Cobble Hill, Brooklyn Heights, you know, Boreham Hill, Carroll Gardens, right around the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not exclusive. We want people from everywhere, but, you know, and
yeah.
on, like I said, on your Mondays and Tuesdays, your regular building nights, that's who I'm sitting there talking to. It's people from that live 2-3 blocks away.
Yeah.
And I've lived in that neighborhood or close to it in Carroll Gardens for almost a dozen years now. So some of these people come in to see me because I've known them outside of the place. Like, mm-hmm. like when I see you there, other people just come in and are just getting to know me, and I'm excited to meet another neighbor.
It's an awesome place. It's right on the corner. It's an old diner, and that's cool. That like most of that's been preserved too.
Yeah, it's almost all. Well, it was almost all original. It was originally built in 1949 as a bar, and this old barman named Buddy worked it 7 nights a week till 4 a.m. I don't know how he did it. That's insane. 4 shifts now.
Wow,
we're all just spoiled thinking 4 shifts is a hard week. But he did till 4 a.m. till he died, and then his, I believe Emma was his wife, and then her two sisters took it over until 2006 when they closed it. But when Toby and Joel got their hands on it, they wanted it to be exactly what it was originally. And so they just did everything they could to clean up what they could, and anything that had to be replaced, they tried to replace with originals, or refabricate and recreate original pieces. So it's pretty amazing. It's kind of like walking into a cozy little time machine.
It is really. Where did the no dancing neon light come from? Did that come from Toby's old bar?
I think he had that fabricated for this bar, but it's a nod to his old bar. He used to own a bar in Chelsea called Passerby, mm-hmm. and it was this little one bartender affair with one of those light up disco dance floors, and they had DJs every night, and I was never smart enough to get in there. I didn't know about it at the time, and I never got in and saw it, but I've heard from many of our now Toby's reimagined regulars that are holdovers from the Passerby days that it was just the greatest party in New York at the time. But he was constantly getting fines for not having a cabaret license, because he had DJs in a dance floor that lights up like people are dancing, and the SLA decided that this was going to be a profit-making scheme.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of his, like, winking nudge in the ribs of the SLA. Hey, awesome. We told them they can't dance. If they do it, it's on them. Find them, not us.
It's awesome. Yeah, I had heard about the bar, like, right after I moved here. I was talking with some bartenders, and I think Nick Jarrett might have been one of them. But they're like, oh, man, we're all going to the Passerby. It's their last night. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. Well, have fun. I'd never been to it. And
yeah.
So I still haven't, but it didn't have the same weight and importance for me. It probably would have had I just gone once.
But, yeah. I think that's kind of what that place did, as far as I can tell from the stories I've heard.
Yeah. And I've read the book Cosmopolitan by Toby, where he talks about, that life of having that bar, and yeah. It's a great book, and there's a lot of really cool information, like one about making gin and tonics that I totally have adopted since then. But yeah, I think I was wondering about the no dancing sign and if that was from the bar or so that's a nice nod to the old bar.
Dude,
you seem to be pretty busy these days. You're also doing some consulting. You just did a place on Atlantic called French Louis. It's Doug from Buttermilk Channel, right?
Yeah, Doug and Ryan, the executive chef of Buttermilk Channel. Ryan's now a partner as well in French Louis. And yeah, they were putting that together. And Doug used to come in to the Jake Walk when I was there every Monday. His daughter had a dance class down the street, so he'd drop her off, come by, have a glass of wine, a little cheese, hang out, we'd chat for an hour, and it was early in the shift, so and it was early in the week, so pretty much the place was dead, and I'd just sit and we'd chat about drinks, and he wanted to come up with a cocktail program for the place, and so we got to talking and said, is this something you'd be interested in working with us on? And I said, of course, I'd love to work with you guys, because Buttermilk's one of my favorite restaurants in the neighborhood. I love that place, and the hospitality they have there is just aces. So anytime I can work with guys that are that nice, I jump at the chance. And so I put together a little, I think I offered him 8 cocktails. He took 7 of them and ran with them, put them on the menu. And I met with his now bar manager, Kyle Storm, who's a really great kid. Who's running his first bar program now and nailing it, I think. So we sat down and talked about what he wanted to do with the program put together a list and put it out. And it's that was in the winter, so it's changed. Kyle's changed over a few things here and there. I think I still have a couple of things hanging on his menu, but I'm glad to see he's taking it, making it his own, and moving on.
Did you do any kind of like mentoring for him, like, or kind of extra training?
We didn't do a lot of training. He had already been working for Doug and had worked at a few other bars. And he's you know, he's one of us cocktail nerds. Like, he knew his stuff from the first conversation. I was like, oh, Doug's in good hands. He'll be fine with this guy.
Nice.
I just, you know, basically having run a program before, I just, the only really things he really needed or didn't need, but would learn, but I could quicken the pace, was just like, put this bottle in your rail, not this bottle, because your costs will go down by this, and just things you learn by having to do the ordering and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fun. It's fun to play around with another person's bar and not really necessarily have to be there like all the time, you know?
Yeah. It's good and bad. I mean, once I saw it getting underway and, you know, and then when I sat in there the first few times and had the food, and like, you can't help but be inspired and be like, oh, this dish would go really well with something like this, and now I want to tweak this, and like, all of a sudden I have three more drinks I want to put on the menu, but I'm not working with them anymore. So it's like, now I hope Kyle gets these cool ideas or better other ideas that I never thought of. So and that's kind of exciting too, that he'll go do that.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is also like, you know, like the kind of conversations we have on this show, and like when we have it at the bar, and we're like, I think the bartending community is amazing, just because of, you know, like if you're at my bar and I'm playing around with a drink, and if I want to try it on in you and see what you think about it, and you come up with an idea, throw it at me, and it's like, oh shit, well, it's on my menu, but I got to give you credit for it too, and that's awesome. That's good for everybody.
Yeah.
So hopefully you and Kyle can talk some shop and maybe not give away all your ideas.
No, you got to hold some close to the chest.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, pickled watermelon, Ryan. Why didn't I think of that before?
That stuff's good.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good snack. It's good eat. So you basically have, you've been a real inspiration to me, actually, on that subject. I get very inspired by bartenders who just love bartending, and then the drinks, like I say this a lot, probably way too much, but I always say that the last thing you should think about as a bartender is making a drink. And you know, you got to think about the customer service and the vibe and the atmosphere and everything else before you even make a drink, you know, because then it doesn't matter if I am a terrible mixologist and even just not even a good mixologist, a bad like drink maker in general, if I have covered all the other bases, I'm pretty sure my drinks are still going to taste good. You know,
they probably would taste better than they would have
if my vibe was off, the music sucked, it was too loud, and my crowd was terrible.
And maybe the drinks will still taste terrible, and that's okay, because if you provide the right atmosphere, I'll stick around if you're entertaining and a nice guy and I'm enjoying the place.
You'll just switch to beer.
I'll just have a can of beer and I'll be a happy man.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So there's always a way out.
Yeah. I like that, the way out. Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had some amazing drinks at really, really bad vibe bars that, yeah, definitely it's the worst seasoning, the worst ingredient, bad vibes. But yeah, I mean, I think that's like from our relationship going back almost 10 years, I think, you've always been a consummate host and amazing, just all around guy, and
thank you.
I always love sitting at your bar, and I can't wait to be able to do it again. I am working so much right now,
yeah,
because everyone's at Tales of the Cocktails. I'm covering everyone everywhere.
I know it. I'm working all weekend too.
But I'll come over as soon as I can, man.
All right, sounds good.
And thanks for stopping in the studio, Tim. It's been too long trying to get you in here.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, man. Cheers. That's it this week on the Speakeasy. Be sure to visit heritageradionetwork.org for tons of more shows that you would definitely be interested in. I know I am, because they all mostly involve food, and I'm starving right now. So let's go get a pizza, Tim.
With your rock and roll load.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.